I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories, the show where America is the star and the American people. To search for the Our American Stories podcast, go to the iHeartRadio app, to Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Up next, a story from a man you don't know, but you'll be happy to have met. Here to tell the story of how he went from street crime to, well, let's not give it away, but to a better life, is Brule Curry. Take it away, Brule.
Well, my life actually began in Richmond, Virginia. That's where I was born at. My mother was married to my father, who I'm named after, and they had gotten divorced when I was about five. And that was very traumatizing to me, because how my father and my mother had split up was because of my father cheating on my mother. And he was hanging out with another son that was the same age as me. So instead of spending time with me, he was with another woman and her son. That was very traumatizing to me. And we moved back to Junction City, Kansas, where my mother was from, moved in with her mother. And then my mother met my father, my stepfather, but I call him father because he actually fathered me. And I was the one that pretty much introduced him, because as a kid, I would go to his house because he lived across the street. And him being very young, a black man, I think at that time, it was hard on African-American men, you know, because they were still going through that period of how to be a man, you know, and to make the work and to make the money. So it was a lot of pressure on man to be a man. And he was that, though he worked all the time, but he drank a lot. So that would cause a lot of fights with my mother and him. Of course, I would get in the middle of it. And then my mother would use me as like a blanket, because when they would get into it, my mother would come to me and lay down on me and tell me things at a young age of nine. I can remember tell me how she's going to leave him and tell me things probably at a 9 year should not hear. Of course, when they would separate, I would see him come back through the door maybe 4 or 5 days later. So I felt like my mother was always lying to me, you know, giving me this false hope of peace and some joy in my life. And the older and older I got, the more fights me and him started to get into, because he started to be jealous of my relationship with me and my mother. So that kind of tore the home apart, and I knew I had to leave. When I left, I joined the military, and I would have to say the military is where I started learning how to sell drugs. I was in Fort Bliss, Texas, by Juarez, Mexico, and at that time you can just go across the border and, you know, get whatever you wanted. It started from there, you know, and I would learn how to get the drugs from one company to the other without me being really the one to be looked at as doing it. And I did that by, of course, manipulating people. I worked as a mail clerk for a captain. So I was able to move around freely everywhere and get to know a lot of people. And of course, find out the ones who like to do drugs. So, and I made sure they would get them through other women friends I would know or whoever, but I knew how to keep myself out of the main light of it. So as my military career was starting to diminish, and it diminished because I joined the military to travel, and then Desert Storm happened. Through Desert Storm, my orders got canceled to go to Germany, so I lost any taste to be in the military anymore, so I asked to get out early, which they gave me an honorable discharge. But by granting me that, I still had this shame on me because I knew I disappointed my mother. So I was lying to my mother probably for a year, and I was kind of living place to place in Texas, friends' houses, and her thinking that I'm working and I'm doing good, but really I was doing really bad. So then I get a phone call though from my mother, and she tells me to come home, that my stepfather, he left, and come home, and I need you to help me and take care of the house and be the man of the house. So as I come home, once again, about 3-4 days later after I'm there, he shows up again. So this time I really was broken, you know, and I just felt like, man, she just, you know, I felt betrayed, like my mother, I couldn't trust my mom, I couldn't trust anybody and everything. So I ended up moving out, having my own place, and I probably was a full-blown alcoholic at that time. Then I found my first baby's mother, which I met, we got married, but we had a child. And that when I first seen her, it was like I seen an angel, you know, like somebody who now I can love and care for and give her something different than I had growing up. And being very broke and feeling that pressure, like I could see my father probably felt, I feel like I had to be a man to take care of the household. I started going out, and I would steal diapers from stores. I would do all this stuff not to get into that street game that I knew a lot of people were getting into. I felt like I was trying to find a way out, but it seemed like there was no way out, you know. But I had this newborn baby. So I remember going to Calhoun, which is in Junction City, is referred to as the ghetto. And I knew everybody pretty much in the city, so I hooked up with somebody from New York City that would go there, and we became good friends. So this is where my drug selling began, and I remember starting just with an 8-ball of crack cocaine. And my idea at this time was just to put food on the table, and I had to do this, you know, I had to do this so I can make it for my family. Well, of course, that led to not an 8-ball, it led to ounces, and then it started leading to half kilos, and then, you know, from there even bigger. So I started trafficking drugs, and then the people I hung out with, all of them were killers. I mean, be transparent, they were killers, they were drug dealers, and that's all how they thought day in, day out. As it grew that big, it really consumed me, you know, where it wasn't no more about my kids, it wasn't about my wife, it was really about me, you know.
And you've been listening to Burl Curry tell one heck of a story, a tragic story in the beginning. He experienced what so many young people experience in this country, too many. Broken homes, the divorce that shattered him, and the father who was hanging with another woman and hanging with another boy. And what heartbreaking thoughts that boys and girls around the country experience when they experience that. And then we learn about his inevitable broken family and his steps straight towards the drug life and drug trafficking. When we come back, more with the story of Burl Curry here on Our American Stories. This is Lee Habib, host of Our American Stories, the show where America is the star and the American people, and we do it all from the heart of the South, Oxford, Mississippi. But we truly can't do this show without you. Our shows will always be free to listen to, but they're not free to make. If you love what you hear, consider making a tax-deductible donation to Our American Stories. Go to OurAmericanStories.com. Give a little, give a lot. That's OurAmericanStories.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, "Somebody's in the house," and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors in our lives, big ones and small ones. If we keep them bottled up, boy, that can be a real problem. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. I know people who've profoundly benefited from therapy, learning everything from coping skills to setting boundaries in their life. You don't have to have experienced major trauma to benefit from therapy. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's safe. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/OAS today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/OAS. BetterHelp, HELP.com/OAS. And we return to Our American Stories. I'm with Brule Curry telling the story of his life. When we last left off, Brule was telling us about his rough childhood, an unstable family, and so much more, including selling drugs. Let's return to the story. Here again is Brule Curry.
If anybody knows about drug selling, to sell drugs in New York City, anybody can't just go and sell drugs there. You have to have what we would call a crew that had to have bodies, you know, that knew they would kill to keep those territories, because very territorial. And I was just with that type of a crew that had a lot of clout. I remember being in New York and I had a friend that had murdered somebody and I was there, I witnessed it, but I helped him, you know, and I held that in. Like, I felt like I'm a part of it, but I wasn't a part of it, you know, but I was going down real fast. They knew rap stars. I've smoked marijuana with famous people that be in videos. And even learning that in that industry, those guys were just as broke as I was trying to find money. They were hustling, but their hustle was selling albums. And we even had connections where rap stars would give us money to flip the money, because when they get record deals, they give them this money to cut these albums, you know. And to cut these albums, they got to pay that stuff back. That's just a front to money up front to get the album made, you know. And this was back in the 90s. So going further, being in New York, I had this dream that I was going to get murdered. I was going to die, you know what I mean, in this situation. I had this dream of these angels taking me off the block. And that's the last time I went to New York. So I left out of there and listened to that dream. And I believe that was a warning telling me to stop that life, unless my life would go to death. But of course, I didn't stop, but I just stopped in New York City, you know. But when I first left, I went back to college. And I tried to change my life and stop with the drugs, but I started getting into other crime. So I started knowing club owners, dating high profile. I mean, women who had money, you know, lawyers, and they doing the most too, you know. But that's where drug dealers make the most money. So when being around these type things, it's hard to get out of it. But I got into like more of different crimes, like insurance frauds and different schemes with documents, you know what I'm saying, to get money and different stuff like that. At this time, I'm like 30 years old. And being 30 years old, I'm with kids going to school that are like 20, 21, but I looked younger, so they never knew. So this is kind of where my AKAs started, and I started living by AKAs from probably 30 years old in my 40s. And I would go by Emmanuel some places. I'd go by all these crazy names. And I laugh now because it's like crazy how we can get so deep and the devil can get you so deep and lost from who you are in Christ, you know, what you were created to do, you know, and he was just getting me so lost within myself of who I was, you know. And these women I would date, they would later sometimes find out who I was, because, you know, women would search for you, you know. And then they still would call me by the AKs, you know. But yeah, I dropped out of school with two classes left. And at this time, meth is really big in the scene in Kansas City. This is like early 2000s. I don't know nothing about no meth, but I know how to make some money and I know how to talk to people. So that's what I do. So I start getting with some big time people that on the meth part, and I'm talking about like they would have businesses that would be 24-hour businesses, but in the business they're selling meth out of it. Going to farms out here in Missouri, you know, where they would be making it on these farms. And this was crazy to me because I knew about cocaine, I knew about crack, but this was a whole nother level of really poison. I took that to another level too. And of course, when I go into anything, I go in to do it big. And that's what I did. And I never forget when I left Kansas City, one reason why was because I felt like the feds was on me. So I had my mail going to my auntie's house because she lived in Kansas City. I never had nothing going to where I lived. Everywhere I would go, I felt like they were watching me. So I fled back to Junction City to my mom's house. My mom knew something wasn't right, I could tell. But I ended up finding a place. That's when I catched that 5-year case because just all this stuff catching up with me. A guy had owed me money. So what I do is I send some guys to beat this guy up. When I send them to beat him up, I just have to be in everything. So I went too. And the guy got put in the hospital. He got beat up real bad, severely, that he had to be hospitalized. And that's when he told my name that I did. So I went to prison that time for distribution and battery. That really kind of hit home to me, you know. It did, but at the same time, only for a little while. I'll get out again. And at this time, I met my third wife. And when I met her, she met me kind of like in the brink of me about to go in, you know? So we're not married, we're just kind of seeing each other. But when she sees me, she was the first woman after 10 years, I would say, that I actually told her my real name. It really threw me. It like scared me. And I felt something inside like that this was somebody I was gonna get married to. That's her, you know? I never forget thinking that. And it was different, not her like just to have a fling with, it was like her like, somebody who would be special to me, you know. I'd be around her with wads of money and buying stuff, and she never would question that. She never would be like wonder, I don't know, and it just threw me. Because I didn't have respect for women because I felt like all women just wanted you for your lifestyle, wanted you for money, because that's what I did, you know, all the time for all these years. But she seemed to like me for not just for money or what I did or who I was. So it was like peaceful to me. Okay, so back up to the 5 years. I just meet my wife. I end up doing my prison time with the 5 years, but I'm not married to her yet. I've only known her for like about 4 months, and I go to prison. And this woman actually waits for me. Yeah. I mean, like, I kind of did wrong by her. I really cared about her, but I still was selling drugs and kind of showing her how to sell drugs, because that's what we do when we're doing, we bring the mess to the house, you know. But she stays there and waits for me. And I come home and she gets pregnant and we have my baby Brielle. And when we have Brielle, I have this dream. Brielle's probably, at this time when I had the dream, she's probably not even a month. And I have this dream again, a dream that come true, you know. And the dream I have is that she's in my arms and the police come to arrest me. And I go to prison. So I tell my wife, I say to her, and wouldn't that be something if I get arrested, you know, with her in my arms? And my wife's like, you're talking this craziness. No, you're not going to prison. That would not happen. You know, because I did stop selling drugs, but I was still using drugs. I'm on parole. And because I would kind of go to people who I knew, because, you know, when you sell drugs at that level, you still got your little people, then they know, you know, they have respect for you. So kind of come through the back door and I do my, smoke my little weed and stuff. So anyways, I get a knock on the door and guess what? It's the police. And they had a hunch that I had drugs in the house. And I did. I think I had just smoked maybe who knows how long ago. Well, I had the drugs underneath my baby's bed in the wrong place. And now looking at it, it sounds so bad. He had it under the baby's bed. No, I hid it there because you think people won't go there. So I have my baby in my arms. The police come and they get her. And I have to call my wife to let her know. And she's left with this baby. And that really broke me. You know, that broke me to pieces.
And we're listening to Brule Curry share his story. My goodness, what a crooked course it took to New York City with his crew, because you got to have a crew when you hit the streets of New York, backup muscle. And there he is. And he has this dream that he's going to get murdered in the city. There are angels that lift him up. And so he leaves New York, but he does not leave a life of crime. By the way, these dreams kept recurring. He meets that third wife, and he's about to go away to jail. And when he's freed, he talks to her about a dream that he's getting arrested, and his little girl is going to be separated from her dad in prison. What a horrifying dream to have. What a horrifying dream to have. But there he is. Can't shed that old life. Still doing drugs. Still probably hanging with the wrong people and on probation. So he's one thin wire away from returning to prison. When we come back, more of Brule Curry, his struggles, his overcoming, here on Our American Stories.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
And we return to Our American Stories, and with Brule Curry telling the story of his life. When we last left off, Brule had gotten into selling drugs and had found himself in a jail cell. Let's return to the story. Here again is Brule.
And this one, I may never forget, I go to that cell, and I just like, first it was almost like a weep that was only pity, you know what I mean? Like pity, just weeping, like, oh my God, what did I do? But then it changed. When they finally got me to my cell and I sat there and it changed and it turned into more of now was like weeping to be delivered from all this mess. And I was tired of losing, you know, like God has something bigger for you. And I always knew this like inside. And then all these dreams and like, what is all this stuff that's going on with me? All this stuff just started like, it was like God just slowed everything down and now just focused on me and that light was on me and he was bringing me home, you know? I just surrendered it all. I just surrendered it all, just fell on my knees and surrendered it. I didn't know how, but I just cried out for Jesus to save me And I just asked him to show me. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I know one thing. All right, now I'm going to ask him. And as I did that, I remember getting up and I got a Bible. And I had all these questions in my head, you know, how do you pray? How do I talk to you, Lord? I want to hear from you. And I had this such passion to want to hear from him so bad. I wanted him to talk to me. And I wasn't going to give up. So I never forget, I was like, I'm going to have the schedule. I'm going to pray. And sometimes I'd wake up and I didn't pray. Oh, you didn't pray. But I would say, okay, I'm going to pray. So I was like, it was almost like God was training me now to have a habit of praying, you know, and change my habits. So I never forget, I was praying and praying, didn't hear nothing, didn't hear, praying and praying, didn't hear nothing. I never forget, I picked up that Bible and I opened it up and it went to Jeremiah 29:11. And then when it went to that Jeremiah 20:11, he spoke to me through that scripture, you know. I want that future and hope. I said, that's what I want. And God spoke to me and told me he had a future and hope. And the first thing I prayed for was him to show me how to love. I said, God, show me how to love people. That's what all I asked. I asked for that. And then I just asked. I left it there. And I tell you what, it seemed like everybody that would come through that cell was the hardest people to deal with. You know, I'm trying to read the Bible. They loud, turn the TV up on purpose while I'm reading. I mean, purposely, like, look at me back there and then turn it up, you know. And he was showing me, and then just to be a light. And then I just started just reading about love and acting, just praying about, God, help me out with this, you know, and calling my wife and telling her how I told my wife, I said, I never loved until now. I said, I'm sorry. I love you, though, but I did not love you. I was like, Lord, I hope she doesn't take this wrong. Because, you know, that's a whole nother level of what you're talking about, especially if you're in a natural hearing it from somebody, you know. She got it, though. I said, I didn't love you. You can't love somebody doing what I did, but please forgive me. I stopped trying to manipulate. I started waking up on time and cleaning the cell and saying hello to the guards and being polite. And they had me in, they would never let me go. They had me in Supermax on the jails. They looked at me as a violent criminal. That's how they looked at me, because they heard stories about me. And I was ruthless like that. I was the type of guy that if you wasn't making me no money, I didn't care. And if you didn't have my money, it was gonna be some problems. I mean, I would literally, I never forget, in Calhoun is the ghetto, and I would know places in there that had nobody living in there. And if they didn't pay my money, I would have guys take them in there and they would, you know, beat them up, beat them down, and they better go get the money. I think that's how I took care of my own pain, you know? But they sent me to prison. When they sent me to prison, God had already gave me the discipline of reading my Bible in the morning, praying. He already gave me that biblical discipline, you know, and I knew I was going, he's going to be with me. And he told me he'd be there, and I trusted that. So as I went there, you know, you meet the people there and everything. And the first thing I wanted to do was connect to God-fearing people, which I couldn't. It's hard to find anybody. I mean, seriously. But other things started happening where, even though I was alone, people who were not walking with Christ would come see me at the late nights, like when it's dark, when no one else knew. Like, I'm talking about shot call gang, shot callers and stuff. And they would come to me and go, man, there's something about you. You have courage. You have great courage. I wish I had what you had. And I was telling them, I have Jesus, you know, and tell them. And they already said they knew that. And then guys, I would go eat. And when I go eat at tables, guys that would sit with me, you know, they would seem to watch their mouth. When they cuss, they would say, excuse me. So I became like, they looked at me as, oh, that guy's not about no nonsense. He's about no nonsense, you know. But guys would, murderers, they would come see me and want to sit down and ask me questions. And they would want to just want the fellowship. And they would tell me that the reason why I come to you is I know you came from what we came from, and I know you're sincere about what you're doing, you know. And even guards, and it got to where guards would ask me to pray for them. Guards, this one guard, I never forget, he had brought me some food, chicken wings that you couldn't get. And I don't feel comfortable with that type of stuff. But he said, no, take it. He said, you are a light in here. I see it. He said, I watch you all the time. You are a light to these guys. I would have murderers that were talking about doing murders when they would leave and would come to me before they would get out. I'm about to get out. I'm going to go kill my father. I had never forget this guy. And me going through at the time, I hadn't had not have reached that point with my own father at that time, my stepfather that I was talking about in the beginning, that we had all this, not a good relation at all, healthy, and the abuse and stuff. It wasn't worked out yet, but something in my heart was just like, I forgave him, you know? I actually forgave him. So I'm sitting here ministering this young man not to kill his father and to give him a chance. And he listened to me, and he said to me, the only one I would probably listen to is you that told me that, because I know you come from what I come out of, and I see you're really sincere about what you're doing with Jesus. He's like, I'm gonna give my dad a chance, like you said. You know, and I'm sitting there thinking as he's leaving, though, I ministered this man, but I still haven't made that point with my dad, you know? So anyways, he leaves, and I finished that prison time up there, and I knew something about it, I knew that I was never going back. Like, God was sharing with me, this is my last time, you know, going to prison, and I was free, you know? I was free, you know? So then when my wife come together, they have this thing where most places in Junction, you can't, if you have a felony, you can't go to. And it's like all these obstacles start coming up, you know? You're free, and you think you just, as a man of God, everything's just supposed to just be perfect. And that's not how it is, you know? But it is perfect, but in Jesus' sight, as far as he's got the plan already there, but when we think in our plan, it's just supposed to go right, you know, right how we want it to. Well, as I go home, they tell me, my parole officer tells me, well, I'm gonna give you a month, but you got to move out of there, blah, blah, you know, set it up. Well, God had got us out of that apartment, and I think in 2 weeks, and we moved to a duplex. And we felt like it was a penthouse, and because it was to us. I mean, we came from, you know, living really bad, you know, to now living into a nice place, and we knew that God had got that for us, you know.
And you're listening to Brewel Curry share his story and his transformation in prison. When he got in the cell, he just started with self-pity, but that quickly got tiring. He was tired of losing, he said. All of those dreams he was starting to wonder about, putting them together. God, he said, was slowing everything down to a halt. So he got a Bible. And those questions that start, well, anybody who has these kinds of experiences, and many of you have, how do I pray? I want to hear from you, God. And he didn't hear from God, at least not the way he thought he might. And then he opened Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. God was talking to him. When we come back, more of this beautiful story, Brewel Curry's story, here on Our American Stories.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
And we return to Our American Stories and the final portion of our story with Brule Curry. When we last left off, Brule had found God while incarcerated and decided to make real changes in his life. Let's return to the story. Here again is Brule Curry.
My all over the place. You know, I wish I could do it more a sequel, but it's like all this stuff happened in so many stages, because then my dad kind of took place. It took place, it took place before the school and stuff. But when my dad, I come home, and my dad, of course, we have had no talkings and whatnot. And my mom tells me, she says to me, she goes, "You'll probably be the one to bring dad to Jesus," is what she tells me. And I'm, you know, being humble, and I said, me, you know? Okay, she goes, "You'll probably be the one." So as I come home, they get into it about something, right? And I go to the house and everything and talk to my dad. He's like, "Yeah, I'm tired of this, blah, blah, blah." And I kind of stayed out the way and just left alone. And I kind of leave. I'm at work, and my dad calls me. And he says, "Son, I need to see you." So he comes to me and he goes, We haven't really had that time to make up and just talk about it and let it go. He's just kind of like, maybe he pushed that aside. He's got so much going on. But he comes to my job, and he just falls in my arms. And me and him start crying. He says, "Son, I'm leaving. I got to go. I can't do it no more, blah, blah. But God has let me, I ain't choosing no side. I love both of y'all. But something told me to be there with him." You know what I'm saying? Like, I have to be there with him. So he cries, he says he's leaving. I said, "Okay, Dad, okay, whatever you need, what you need." He goes, "I'm packing my stuff tonight." He said, "If you can come there and help me just get my stuff loaded, blah, blah, I'll be fine." So I said, "Okay." So I go up to the house, my mom's sitting on the couch. She's not, because my mom's like, "Hey, I don't condone you leaving or whatever. I'm not urging that. So I'm gonna stay out the way and trust God, blah, blah, you know, and everything." So she stays out the way, and I tell my mom, I'm kind of feeling torn, like, "Hey, Mom, I'm not, you know, I'm on both y'all." My mom says, "I understand." I said, "God's leading me to do this." I help him pack, he's talking to me, he leaves. He comes back about 6 months later just to visit, and he's bragging about his job. He's got out there, "I'm, you know, make this and that," and we're all kind of just like this. So something to me said, which I know is God led me to say, "Really, Dad? You know, really? You know, we're happy to see you here, and you're telling us about how good it is out there, you know." And he kind of stopped, and he went back. Well, he ends up coming back maybe 2 months later. And as he's coming back, he comes back. My mom tells me he's back home and everything. And then he calls me again. He says, "Son, can we meet at McDonald's?" He says, "Son, it's not nothing bad. I just want to meet with you." And he just pretty much laid it out, you know, to forgive him, and he wants something, a relationship, you know, in his own way. And I knew where he was getting at, you know. And I had already forgiven him, and that was the beautiful thing. I had already forgiven him. I was just seeing what God was having for me to do for him, more of for his soul, you know. So we talk, we start kind of hanging out and stuff, and he even calls me, like, take him to the hospital. I go, 10 o'clock at night, I get in my truck, go get him, take him to the hospital. We talk all the way. Well, then one Sunday, he goes to church. He goes to church, and I believe you was there, brother, when he gave his life to God. And he gives his life to Christ, you know. And my mom looks at me and was like, "See, you know, gives his life to Christ." And my mom always tells me, you know, my father's passed now, but tells me that she believes that he needed to see, when he seen my life, how God turned around, that's what it nudged him. Because he used to brag about me, and this animal, this guy I thought wanted no good for me, before he passed away, all he did was talk about me. My son is doing great things. My son is doing this. He goes into prisons and all this, you know, and everything. And how God restored that was just remarkable. He didn't just restore us together. He restored him, you know, like brought him, you know, gave him eternal life, you know, brought him to where he can have eternal life for himself, you know. And the last thing I heard him say to me, he calls me and before he passed, because he passed the day after he called me, and he called me and he said, "Son, they're sponging records.
there's SpongeBob Records and you can get your registered for little or nothing. You, son, you know, this would be big for you and you can, you know. And I was wanted to tell him, like, because one of my biggest testimony when I go to prison is, I don't need to sponge my record. God has already sponged it. Like with this, working for the state, I work for the federal feds now, you know. I mean, for all these different entities that I work for, you know. So my thing is, you get on God's plan, none of that, you don't have to worry about that stuff. You know, and maybe God will later, I don't know, but he's not moving me. And I wanted to tell him that on the phone, you know, but something in me said, no, he's excited for something he's trying to do for you. So I left. I said, yeah, Dad, we'll talk later. We'll talk later, Dad. And then that next day, I was taken out. I used to take mothers and children out to their moms with their kids, single parents, out to eat for lunch. And that was just like bonding with the kids and showing them how to have healthy times out and how to eat. Because a lot of times, youngsters, they don't know how to do that. They weren't raised to know how to do that. I got a phone call from my mom that he had passed away, you know, and I had left. But it was something about, I wept, but I was at peace. It was like God, that time, restored my relationship with him, and I was at peace from all that past. But if I didn't allow it, I could have stayed hard in my heart. I ain't gonna forgive him. He did this and that, and not look at him as a human being, as a person like me that's done many wrong. And that's what we do, you know. He did this, you did that, but you done did a million things. Like Jesus said, throw the first stone, you know, if you have not never sinned, you know. And I gave him that opportunity, but the peace I have now, and now all I see is the good, you know, the good that he did for me, you know what I'm saying? But he was, man, he was like, he was my everything. I was his, you know, and everything. I mean, everywhere I went, people, he bragged about me everywhere. And the same guy I thought didn't want no good from me, you know, but God, you know, and everything, you know. Well, God sees us, he don't see no, he knows we have mess, but he sees the good in us, what he put in there, you know, what he put in there. And I think that's what when I was doing all the mess, some of those people were seeing something, there's something different here, you know. All that other stuff I was doing was garbage, you know, but I mean, and I knew it. That's the thing that's crazy. I would be around these guys who I knew they were the real part, and I was like, I don't seem like I'm really this part. But it's like I almost had to go through that to do what I'm doing now. Like I had to go through it, you know. And I thank God that he called me. You know, how much time we got? We got a little bit. What's funny is before I gave my life that last time I went to prison, right? I knew I was feeling my heart, what's my purpose? I called my mother up and I said, Mom, I'm looking for my purpose. She goes, keep looking for it, right? And I'm like, she ain't telling me nothing, you know? That ain't what I want to hear. You know, you want to be like right there. But as we know, the purpose is right there inside us. And the connection to it is God. So once we connect, we're good, you know? But I wanted a different answer. I didn't want that. So that's what she told me. And I would be watching movies of people helping people and start crying like a baby. And I'd be sitting there with people like, my brother right here could be sitting there with me, and I'd play it off, and I'd get up. Like, we could watch something that someone rescued somebody out of a fire, and it was happened to be a cat still in there, and they went in there and got the cat, you know? And I'd just start, like, bawling, but I'd be like, excuse me, and I go, and I play it off all tough, you know? I'd be in the bathroom, and I was like, what is going on with me? You know what I'm saying? God was dealing with me. And then at the time, I even had this guy, you know, he came to me. He's like, the cartels was, they were short with stuff, products. So if I would get the last bit of it and I could put a price, whatever I wanted on it. And voice inside said, don't do it. You know, and I felt the voice. Like I said, I always had a sensitivity to hearing, you're right, you know, but I wasn't strong enough to say no. And then, you know. But I knew, you know, I knew the whole time. God was dealing with me. He was dealing with me. But when I fell on those knees, I tell you, I never forget it.
And a special thanks to Brule Curry. What a story we heard. I had to go through what I had to go through to do what I do now, to be where I am now. And that's so many of us listening. I know it's me. And the way the Father and Son kept getting put together by God Each time, the son is trying to lead the father to God, but doing it with great patience and kindness. That last call, when the father calls his son, excited with the news that he could get his record expunged. And the son, well, he wasn't that excited about that because, well, he's a believer and he believed his record was already expunged by God. But he didn't say that. He wanted the father to enjoy his excitement. And he lost his father not that long thereafter. The story of Brule Curry, a story of triumph over tragedy and redemption and love here on Our American Stories.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.